Okay.
Ready to go? Okay, so this is a... What I want to focus on this morning is a follow-up to last week, for those of us who are here. And by doing that, I'm going to go through... This is more or less what the second half of the story sheet from last week. I put the beginning, which I think is a little bit more confusing, leading up to the section. Did I get the date wrong? Oh yeah, right. Let me thank you for reminding me. All right, let me just first say thank you to Esther and Michael Kurzman for our sponsorship of this morning. Le'ilui nishmat Esther and Rabbi Pell's brother, Rabbi Yaakov ben Rav Gershon, zechron lebracha. The learning that we do this morning should be a skut for zaliyan shama. As is my my want, I usually ask for a quick, just something to know about the niftar when we're doing something le'ilui nishmato or nishmata. And from what I understand, Rabbi Appel Zichrono Livracha was really quite something else. I of course didn't know him, but I do know the rest of the family, and I see and know him through their eyes and their family, and I am quite certain that he was a very special person. So the learning that we're doing today, which of course is about Pesach and the Pesach Seder, which is of course perhaps the most family-centered, family-based mitzvah and evening of halakha that we have throughout the Jewish calendar. It's particularly apropos, knowing what a wonderful family man Rabbi Appel was, and it's fitting that this is the topic that we discuss in his memory. So, like I said, the learning that we do this morning should be his chut for his aliyat neshama. And his memory should continue to be for a blessing for all of his family and all of Klal Yisrael. Okay, so I want to continue with the theme that we were discussing last week, which is the general structure of the Seder. But I want to focus the second half today, or maybe more than the second half today, about how we can use the structure of the Seder to enhance the content of the Seder. And that's really my biggest crusade when it comes to the Seder. I think that however much we can do, however much we can think of and put into the content and the educational value of the Seder, the more that we do that, the better. I think that the more that we're thinking in terms of the participants at our Seder, the people sitting at the table, and what is going to be interesting to them, and what is going to be valuable and meaningful to them, the more that we're thinking along those lines, the more valuable the experience is going to be. My contribution, at least my big crusade when it comes to this effort, is about making that a function of the content of the Haggadah. To think educationally, to think in terms of differential education, to think in terms of your kids, to think in terms of the participants is great. I think that it needs to be centered around the content. So that's really what I'd like to discuss. Using the content and structure of the Haggadah as a vehicle for educational value at the Seder. So let's just quickly go through what we were doing last week, and we're going to finish up the discussion of Magid and how it's the content is structured. And then from there, we're going to get into discussions, and I'll say it again, I'll remind everybody at the end. If anybody has any thoughts that they'd like to share, if anybody has any questions or just in general strategy questions about how to make a Seder more interesting. These are the people that are at my Seder. I'm dealing with this age and this age and this age. I'm dealing with this kid who's really interested and this kid who's not so interested. I think I would really love to have a discussion with anyone about that. And if we come up with anything really valuable, I think that it would behoove us to send the word out. So maybe we can write an email with some suggestions based on what we can come up with today and following up. Okay, so we start off. Kaddish, Shochat, Karbas, Yachatz are all parts of the Seder. We're not going to get into anything specifically. We don't have the time. I think every line of the Seder, every line of the Haggadah, could spend an entire shiur on. So we're obviously not going to get to do anything very, very closely. But so I think that in terms of the structure, the first bunch parts of the Seder, I think of. Maybe what is of their greatest value is their lead up to the Magid, their lead up to the Manishtana. If you read through the Rambam's Haggadah, if you read through how the Rishonim understand the Seder, what is most noticeable about the first parts of this is that it starts off the way we ordinarily would a Shabbos meal. Right? We sit down and we make Kiddush. But immediately from that first moment, you're noticing things that are different. The fact that the Seder plate is on the table when usually there's nothing on the table until we bring out food. That's automatically something that's different. The fact that the Kiddush is really the same text, but immediately we veer. We even get up and we go wash, but we all know that what's the defining characteristic of Urchatz is the fact that we don't make a bracha. So from the very first part, we are doing things that are similar but a little bit different. And here's where I think the educational value is. Since so much of what the structure of the Seder is coming to do is about pedagogy, it's about setting up a situation in which people are going to be curious and ask questions, because that give and take is the best way to actually exchange information. The fact that we're doing things similar but a little bit different is probably the best way to ask questions. Think about your 12-year-old selves, all right? Think about your children when they're that age. When you do something that's completely different, let's say everybody around the table all of a sudden starts talking about politics, all right? Bibi made had his cabinet meeting on the Golan last week. He's meeting with Putin, and he wants everybody to know, Lifneam Va'eda, he wants to declare to the world that the Golan is not up for grabs. There's no negotiations that can be... Right? So let's say we all start discussing that around the table. I imagine many or most of us find that to be something that's interesting. If you're 10, you hear somebody mention Bibi and cabinet meeting, and you start to tune out. Right? That's something that you don't associate with. It's something that that's not relevant to you. You don't understand, and you're not interested in. Okay, so if we start to do things, and then this is where I think we can appreciate these first parts of the Seder. If we start to do things that are completely irrelevant or completely off the off our ordinary charts of ordinary conduct, then the people at the Seder who are unfamiliar are going to tune out, or people who are uninterested are going to tune out. This is the brilliance of the structure of what we're doing originally. We start off not completely different, but very, very, very similar, but with slight nuance differences. We sit down at the table the way we ordinarily do on Shabbat, but we have a Seder plate there. We make Kiddush, but in this Kiddush, everybody's got a kos. We get up to wash Netzilat Yadayin, but we have to make that announcement that nobody's making a bracha. We sit down and we eat something, but it's only a tiny amount, and we're dipping it in a little piece. It's not the whole salad course. It's only a tiny piece of celery or potato, whatever your minhag happens to be. We dip it in something, and even though everybody's hungry, we don't eat more. Everybody's only allowed to have a little piece. These are all the types of things. We get up to make. We get up and we hold up the matzahs. This is yachas. We get up and we hold the matzahs, right? We hold the way we ordinarily hold the challahs on Friday night. This is the point where we ordinarily would make hamotzi, but we don't make hamotzi, and we show that there's three and not two. We break one. Think about this in the mind of a child, for whom the structure of the Seder is in many ways geared. That's not talking about Bibi Netanyahu at the table and the cabinet meeting in the Golan. That's talking about blue and white, blue and white, the blue and white cookies for Yom Ha'atzmaut and how tasty they are. Only instead of the blue and white cookies, we're having them pink and white today, and everybody should know how everybody should notice how different they are. I'm speaking metaphorically. We're obviously not having cookies at the Seder. The point that I'm making is that you're picking up on something that is of interest to the kid, and you're changing it slightly. That's the type of thing that can that can really spark curiosity and interest. And that's where I think that if we're going to have discussion at the beginning parts of the Seder, and as I'll emphasize again as we move forward now, I think that the discussion should be as much as possible saved for the real meat and potatoes of the discussion. But if we are going to have discussion at the Seder about the early parts, that's what it's got to be. Everything about the early parts of the Seder have to be highlighting how it's similar but slightly different. Yeah. We usually do. If you have little kids, I think this is a great question to ask. All right, how is this different from what we ordinarily do on Shabbos? Can you tell me? All right, name me five ways that what we're about to do is different than Shabbos. See if we can name all five. The person who's the first person to name all five gets a candy. All right, we'll get the candy later. But you have a question?
No.
Oh, you can. Right. I think that highlighting how it's similar but different. Like, five ways in which tonight is similar to Shabbos, five ways in which it's different. I think that the first lead up till we get to Magid, I think that's the best opportunity to highlight those things. And if we're trying to engender curiosity, and by the way, I think that this is the case for older people also. If we're going to have discussion, this should be where the discussion is geared. You don't need to make it about candy, although Michael would appreciate if you did. But this is, I think, the crux of it. You can get into what the Shibboleth Aleket and what the Ritva had to say about the Tibbul of Amashke and the Sugya and Psachim. I think that you could. I think that that's relevant. But I think that, the underlying structure and theme of the discussion at this point in the Seder should be the difference and similarities to the ordinary way that we sit down on Shabbat. Because if we look in the structure of the Haggadah, what it's supposed to lead up to is the curiosity that makes a person, at this point in the Seder, burst forth with the question of Manishtana Halayla Hazeh. All right? We're supposed to get to that point with curiosity. I would even argue that maybe the best, this is just another suggestion, maybe until you get to that point, the best thing to be doing is pointing out differences and asking questions, without even necessarily getting to answers. Yeah. Why is this night different than all other nights? So the children will ask, that's not a bad answer. But it's so that you can say, because we have a lot to talk about later, and we need to point out the fact that this is all about what we're going to discuss. All of these things that are strange, all of the things that we're doing that are a little bit different, this is all about what we're going to discuss later. We get to Magid. Okay, now Magid is all about getting to what I was saying before, the meat and potatoes of the discussion at the Seder. So we start with the Halach Ma'anya. So again, every paragraph has got loads of history and loads of nuance. We get the Halach Ma'anya. Why is this paragraph still in Aramaic? Everybody's got an answer. Kol dichvin yetev yechol. How are we inviting people when we're only sitting at the Seder? These are all the questions that people have been asking for centuries. Really good and really important. Again, let me tell you what's happened at my Seder growing up over the years, and not that it was a bad thing. It's just I think that this is typical of lots of people's Seders. You're so fired up and excited to discuss the Pesach, and you're so fired up and excited to discuss the Seder, you end up giving the way it would happen at my table for a bunch of years. We would go around the table. Everybody would give 12 different answers to why Kol Dichvin Yetev Yechol. We're inviting people to the Seder, even though we've already invited people, and so this is a little bit late to be inviting people, right? It's the famous question: how can we ask people to come if they need a place when we haven't invited them until now? We would give 12 answers to that. Interesting discussion. Then everybody would go through the Manishtana, and by the time we would do that, we're already 45 minutes, an hour into the Seder, and everybody's hungry and everybody's gassed, and nobody's really interested anymore. Now, the fact that we've gotten to this point and we've demonstrated interest among everybody there is really a good thing. I can't say that enough. The problem is, though, that we've basically, everything until this point, I think, is supposed to be sparking interest into a discussion. Now, if that's the case, that's you reading the back jacket of a book with so much gusto and excitement, and then you're looking into it and you're saying this is that and this and that and this and that. This is what I think about the book jacket. Watching the preview to a movie with so much excitement, and then you finally sit down for the movie to start. You finally open up chapter one, and you're exhausted. It's supposed to be whetting your appetite. It's supposed to be getting you interested. So, with that in mind, speed it up. Right? Don't get caught at the Manishtana. So I made some suggestions last week about how to speed this up. I would not. I think that we should do everything that we can to make sure that there isn't more than one person singing it. If you have a bunch of kids at the table and everybody's learned it in school, have everybody sing it together. I know that the long-standing minhag is that the youngest person sings it. So maybe the young person can sing it, and then everybody else at the table can sing it together. If we go through everybody at the table, then what I just described is likely what's going to be. And I think that that's not, basically what's going to happen is we're missing opportunities. So get through that as quickly as possible. Halach Ma'anya, I put these little shoulder notes here. I think that in terms of the grander structure of what's going on, the most important point is that we are basically pointing to the props. We're pointing to the things that are different and are unique to the Seder. Halach ma'anya diachalu avatana v'ara dimitzrayim. This is the bread that our ancestors ate in Mitzrayim. Everybody's going to sit there and wonder, okay, now let's tell me about Mitzrayim. But again, it's just supposed to be whetting our appetite. So you highlight the fact that things are different, get into it. Kan ha-ben shoel, here is the point where the kid should ask. And then immediately after that, you shift right into it. You shift right into Maggid. So let's start with that. I think that the, and we pointed this out last week, the answer to the manishtana, halayla zami kol halaylot, is not immediately an answer. I don't think that the actual story of the Exodus doesn't happen until, right, until B, right, until we get to Mitzchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Yoavotenu. Before we get to that, all right, I think that this, the, what the structure of the Haggadah is doing is basically framing what the story is about. And we spoke about different themes last week, right? We spoke about how a part of this is halal v'hodah, you know, praise and thanksgiving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We spoke about how a part of it is pedagogy, you know, about how things are supposed to be transmitted. But I think that the underlying theme of the entire Leil HaSeder, right, and this is the argument that I made last week, I'm gonna make it with a little bit more substance today, the prevailing theme that underlies the entire Seder is the fact that Jewish history is supposed to be encapsulated by this evening. Where does Yitziat Mitzrayim fall in? I think that the discussion that's supposed to be happening at Leil HaSeder is that Jewish history is, this is the most pivotal moment in all of Jewish history. The moment in which we got our independence from Mitzrayim, we had Yitziat Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out, that colors every single thing that happened in Jewish history subsequently. Because of that, I think that there is no discussion about the history of Jewish people from the times of Tanakh until the times of today that is not significant and not relevant and not inappropriate to be discussed at the Seder. That's the I can't say that enough. If there is a period in Jewish history that is interesting to you, to your kids, if there is a point in history, if there's a point in recent history that's relevant to your family, talking about the grandparents that were in the camps, talking about family members that were there at the Hakamat HaMedina, people, members of your family, personal history that was relevant to the global discussion of Jewish history, that there is no time that it is more appropriate to fit that into a discussion than it is in Leil HaSeder. Any way that you can use Jewish history to amplify and interest amplify the content and interest the members at your table is, I think, is extremely significant. And I don't just mean in terms of like pivotal moments like the Holocaust or Hakamat HaMedina. Your family growing up at the Lower East Side and how Jewish history developed in New York, I think, is also significant. Your family, you know, your family living in Haifa and how, you know, in the 40s the Jewish population in mandatory Palestine and then Eretz Yisrael and then Medinat Yisrael was 90% secular and your family was religious and the way they used to have the Pesach Seder during that period, like, all of that is relevant. Personal history, collective history, the fact that Jewish history is connected to Yitziat Mitzrayim, I think that is the underlying theme. And that's where, if you look at the actual text, that's what's being emphasized. Avadim ayinu lefarah b'mitzrayim, ayotzeinu Hashem misham. All right, the only thing in the opening line that we're saying is that we were slaves, and God took us out of it. The whole Yitziat Mitzrayim is in, if you, you know, in this paragraph, is encapsulated in one sentence. But then the crux of the discussion, our lives would be indelibly different, unquestionably different than they are today, were this event not to have happened. You realize historically that this is not a true statement. And this is where you can start the discussion. Historically, this is not a true statement. The Egyptian Empire fell apart, right? Yeah? So we would, let's say we were still subjugated, we would first have been subjugated, and this unfortunately happened, you know, there was the Egyptian Empire, but then there was the, you know, there was Rome, and there was Greece, and there was, you know, the Assyrians, and there was the Babylonians, and there was the Persians, all these people
Forget the Mamluks.
The Mamluks, yeah.
I love that.
There were all of these different powers that ruled the world. This is not a historically correct statement. So, if it's not a historically correct statement, it must be saying something. The point is that we would still be subjugated by someone if we never gained our independence. All right, and if I can, this is not really my goal here, but we discussed in the Tzionut Shiurim, you know, from a few months back, how the early Zionist thinkers, how they viewed, you know, ancient Jewish history, and for a whole school of the philosophy of Zionism, the fact that Jews had their independence and had an independent monarchy and had an independent state 2,000-3,000 years ago is what gives us license to have one today. I mean, if I were a teenager and I was wondering what was going on at the Seder, that I think is what would have spoken to me. The Hakamat HaMedina, for a lot of people, Eretz Yisrael, Medina Yisrael, could never have happened, could never have occurred, could never have had the weight of its significance and justification for existence, were it not for the independence that was granted 3,500 years ago. Now, that's a bold statement that an event that happened so long ago is so relevant to today, but it's 100% true. How can we ever claim justification for Hakamat HaMedina and land that the world, a large part of the world, deems to belong to somebody else if we didn't have this argument? And I think, when I read it, that's one of the things that really speaks to me. So, if you have people at your table that think about these kinds of things, all right? Look, there's never been, certainly in this part of the world, there's never been a time where it is more likely that there are going to be Jewish people who are even the traditional Jewish people that are going to be sitting around the table and questioning whether the Jewish state has a right to exist. Don't you think that this is if ever there was a time to make this, I don't know who's going to be at your Seder. I imagine at many of ours this is not a question. But for many of us it will be. This is such a great time for this discussion. Right? You can't divorce history from history. You can't divorce the fact if the claim for the people that were there to Eretz Yisrael is that they were there first, then this is the most true statement you've ever heard. Right? If we were not taken out of Mitzrayim, then we would still be subjugated. We would never have gained independence. Okay, that was more of a tangent than I was planning on going on, but I think a good example of what I mean about making things relevant to Jewish history and how these things are, even until today, until contemporary times, these comments are supposed to be relevant. Okay, we go from there, from this point of Jewish history, to the flow to the very next statement. Where the very next point that we're making is how important this is. Right? We end the previous paragraph of "V'chol amar b'lasaber b'tziyat Mitzrayim ari zeh meshubach." Why? Because of how significant it is to all of Jewish existence. We then have a story of somebody who was misaper a lot. Right? I think that in its simplest understanding, the story of the Rabbanim in Bnei Brak sitting down and being misaper b'tziyat Mitzrayim kol to alayla, discussing the Exodus all night. I think in its simplest form, the understanding of that is how important this is. So again, if you're going to make it, if you're going to just trying to get through the Seder in its simplest way, the best thing I think to do at this point is to talk about, these are some of the most important Jews that ever lived. All right, they cared about Kriyat Shema. You can imagine. They cared about getting up and davening in the morning. And yet, this is such a pivotal, such a significant mitzvah, such an important piece of Jewish history, Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus, that they completely forgot everything else existed. I think that that's a very powerful message. And again, in its simplest, most pshat form, I think that that's what the Haggadah is telling us. Not only is it relevant to Jewish history, it is the most important thing that you could be doing at this moment and maybe ever. And then the next story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is furthering that. Right? What is the drasha that he learned? Right? So the first part is it should be discussed day and night. And then the next opinion, the significance of this discussion is that it's eternal. It's supposed to occupy our day and night. It's supposed to be on our mind. This is the refrain that the Haggadah, the text of the Haggadah keeps coming back to. Every aspect of our existence is colored by this event. Now again, we haven't even discussed the event yet. We haven't discussed any of the details. We haven't discussed any of the aspects of Yetziat Mitzrayim. What led to it? Why we were there? How did slavery happen? What we were subjected to when we were slavery? How did the Yetziat Mitzrayim happen? What was so significant about the Exodus? None of this has been discussed yet. All we're saying is that the story that we are about to tell is a really, really important one. Right? Think about how Star Wars markets their movies. They spend 2 years giving you a tiny bit of information. So that the idea is, this is marketing genius. All right, George Lucas mastered this in the 70s. That by the time you get to the movie, you're so your brains are exploding with curiosity and interest and excitement that you're willing to see the movie, not only like that right when it comes out, but you're going to see it a few other times because that's how much your psyche has developed into you being excited and anticipating this moment of education. Ultimately, a movie, all it is information. It's entertainment, but it's entertainment through information. That's what the Seder is doing right now. It's telling you, we're going to discuss the Seder tonight. Look at all these props on the table that are relevant to the Seder tonight. Not only that, but it's the most important event in all Jewish history. Our lives would never be the same. The lives of all Jews in all of history would not be the same. Medinat Yisrael could never have happened if it wasn't for Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Not only that, but it is, on a religious level, it's supposed to be relevant all day and all night. If you're not walking around as a religious person thinking about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the way Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim are saying, then you're missing something. That's how important this is. This is like breathing. This is like eating. Right? This is as important to your existence as anything ever was. And yet, we haven't said a word about it. We haven't said a word about it. The only thing we know is that there are lightsabers in the movie. And the only thing that we know is that somebody gets their hand cut off. But we don't know anything about anything. And we don't know anything about the actual detail. And that's what that's what it's leading up to. Final point, and I think this is the way we need to understand the Arba Banim, again, in terms of the pshat, in terms of, without getting into the detail of each individual thing, the way we need to understand the Arba Banim, which is the next thing, is to dispel a notion. Okay? You might have thought, with everything that we were just discussing, the importance of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the importance of Jewish history, the importance of every aspect of our existence being tied up into this one event in history, you might have thought that's something that only can be appreciated by a certain class of people. Only by a certain level of religious observance. Only by a certain level of education. Only by a certain level of intellectual capacity. The story of the Arba Banim, and we touched on this last week, the significance of the Arba Banim and why it's here is to emphasize the point that every single person has a stake in the story. Every single person has a stake in this discussion of why this story is so significant. And again, if you're looking to zip through parts of the Seder, or if you're looking to garner interest by members of your table in order to get, you know, and still make something meaningful but getting to the next one, I think that when you get to the Arba Banim, the most important thing to talk about, everybody is this point. Everybody can understand, every kid, every adult can understand that people are different, right? If I could speak as a psychologist here, it is the most basic realization of humanity is that people look different, people think different, people act different, people feel different, people associate with things differently, people experience things differently. And everybody understands that. It's one of the earliest developmental milestones that a child has when they realize that my experience is not necessarily the same as your experience. And this is going to happen with a toddler around, you know, the 2 to 3 year old range. When they recognize that the fact that I see something doesn't mean, the fact that I don't see something doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. There can be existence outside of my own purview. Alright, and it's a very like superficial way of thinking about it, thinking in this context, what it tells you is that every single human being, alright, no matter who they are, can appreciate difference. That's what you need to highlight here. This story is relevant to everyone. To everyone. No matter who you are, every kid, and put it in their terms. If your kid is if you have a kid who's a sixth grader in school and they're struggling with their spelling tests, or they're sitting there and they're looking and they're noticing that this kid is always gets hundreds, or that the kid that always gets hundreds and they notice the kids are that other kids are different. I mean, it happens in every family. If you're speaking in your kid's language, you've got to highlight that. You've said that you think that you're smarter or you're less smart than the other kids in your class. You think that you're better at basketball or not as good at basketball than the other kids in your class. You think that you are prettier or less pretty than your sibling or that your friend or something like that. The point of Pesach is that we're breaking down the barrier of difference between people. We are one nation, we are one people, and everybody has experienced this, no matter who you are. And as a result, everybody's got a stake in the story. Everybody's got to take part. So don't you think for a second, my little 4-year-old or my little 18-year-old, that you or your sibling is the one that's going to be the most targeted in the telling of this story. Everybody is. Everybody. We're going to do it with everyone. If there ever was a family meeting where everybody took part, if there ever was a family vacation where everybody had a good time together, it's going to be this. We're all doing it together. We're all in this together. And from that, that's the last point that we make. And then we shift into there. Yachol Mirosh Chodesh is another point. We'll get to it another time. And we shift from there into the telling of the story. Okay? Notice that everything that we've discussed up until this point has basically skirted around the issue of the story of the Exodus. The best that we had was the one-liner of Avadim Hayinu Lefar B'Mitzrayim Ve'yotzeinu Hashem Misham B'Yad Chazaka V'Zorana Tuya. So that gave us nothing. All it did was whet our appetite. And now, if we spend an hour on the Manishtana and on Avadimai and on Halak Manya, then we've gotten to this point and we're exhausted. If we use it, we use the structure and the text of the Haggadah properly, the way it was, I think it was meant as a springboard to discuss Yetziat Mitzrayim, then we're getting to this point and we are extremely curious and we are armed with the lessons that we've learned. It's relevant to everybody. It's the most significant event in all of Jewish history, and everybody's got a stake in it, no matter what. Everybody is relevant to this telling. Okay, so that's a really good, if you think about it, you know, from a teaching perspective, that's a really good intro. Really, you've gotten to the real core of what it's about, and you've piqued everybody's interest in the process. Then, we get to the story. Okay, so we start with, the first section are the antecedents. Okay, so the first three or four paragraphs of the story actually are a little bit less, all right, a little bit less about the story than about what's led to the story. This is the but think about it. If the point here is that we're trying to discuss what led to the story, and that's what you gotta use. The text of the Haggadah is really good, and depending on how much of a textual person you are, you can. That's I think that should. Be commensurate with how much you're focusing on the text. But the text, whether you're doing a close reading and you want to say, we put the comma here, we put the comma here, we use this conjugation of the verb instead of that conjugation of the verb, or whether you're just reading it quickly and then saying, and then discussing afterwards, the text should be a springboard for discussion. Right? So in this section, you want to be talking about how, what makes people slaves? How do you get to a point where people are slaves? Slavery is something that has been plaguing human history. For a really long time. It's horrible to say, but it still exists in some parts of the world. But everybody has learned, you know, basic American history. I like to frame this in terms of the antebellum stuff. I'm an American history person, so I like to think about that. So what leads to it? How does one people get subjugated under another? Because at one point, everybody was exactly the same, right? The Horn of Africa, that's where all the, you know, for the evolution people, that's where everybody really started from. But, okay, we can... Give me looks, right? So if everybody really started in one place, then what leads to it? So this is a discussion. You could be interested in history. You know, there's technology, and then there's advancement, and then technology leads to leads to states being built. And once states being built, we can organize around an idea. We can organize around an army, and then. All right, so that's I think the general question. And in terms of the Jewish people, what led to it? So this is a good time to talk about some of the midrashim, that discuss these things about what happened with Bnei Israel, Bnei Yaakov, how they came down, how they originally were elite members of society, but the fact that they were different, allowed for discrimination. Okay, one of the big lessons of America is that the extent to which you are incorporated into the society around you, that's the extent to which nobody can ever point to you and say you're different. The extent to which you are different and you stay different, no matter how much you want to incorporate. If anybody can ever point a finger at an entire group of people, that holds the potential for discrimination. Okay, so. Nebuch, the people who have a different skin color, there's absolutely nothing they can ever do to integrate fully into society because they're always going to look different. If they are of a minority appearance, then they're always going to be associated as a minority. For Jewish people, so we look, right, or the white Jews at least, we look, European Jews look the same way that everybody else in society does. So the only way that we've been candidates for discrimination have been sticking together and remaining a distinct group. And so that's the positive and the potential negative in all of Jewish history for the Jewish people staying a Jewish people. Peoplehood, p- has the potential for discrimination. Discrimination has the potential for subjugation in, when you're the minority in a society. Again, I think that if you want to ever use this to come back to the importance of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael and Medinat Yisrael, I know that this is not a plug for Zionism. I just think that if ever there was a story that highlights its significance, it would be this. All kids are marching in the, and I think that this is the other reason I'm mentioning it is because it's a way to make this relevant. All kids are marching in the Israeli Day Parade. All kids are eating the blue and white cookies on Yom HaSmud. And the extent to which you can appreciate how important having your own state is, I think it's when you're teaching these lessons, I think that this is something that actually can be relevant to a kid at all ages because they understand what Israel is. But you know, I'm very early in this parenting process. All of you, I think, are far later than me. But I have a 3-year-old right now. What does he know about Israel? He knows that there's kosher candy there, more kosher candy than there is here, and he knows that Abba and Mommy always talk about how it's their favorite place in the world, and how and how it's where the Jewish people went when they left Mitzrayim, and that's where they are now. So, you know, this is a good opportunity to talk about how this is why it's so important for the Jewish people to live in Israel. Because if we lived in Mitzrayim, then, you know, look at all these things that can happen. And woe is to all of us when our kid then asks, so why do we not live there now? Right? I don't have a good answer. So if anybody will, at least I don't have a good answer for my 3-year-old. Anyway, in this section we're talking about the lead up to the story. Okay, the blue that I put here, I mentioned this last week. The blue that I put here, I think, are the points that highlight the Jewish history aspect of it. Okay, so now the other theme that we're mentioning is right, and I think that I haven't spoken about this much so far this morning. The other theme that I think is important to highlight here is the importance of Shevach v'Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And I think that is, you know, maybe what would distinguish different type of siddurim around the world, even if they are, you know, talking about Jewish history, is the importance of God's place in this story. Right? And the book Baruch Shomer Havtachato, the text of the Haggadah frames the discussion of the Yitziat Mitzrayim in terms of a promise that Hashem made to the Jewish people already from Avraham Avinu, from the Brit Bin Abitarim. Okay, and that's the Mitchila of the Avodah Zarah. But you should know, originally we had a really difficult time, and we were of the Avodah Zarah, but we recognized the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe, Avraham, and Hashem made a pact, and then we went down to Mitzrayim, and things got lousy, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu always stood through us. Not just in this story, but throughout all of Jewish history. And that's, I think, the final theme. You know, the importance and significance of Yitzhak Mitzrayim as it relates to all of Jewish history, yes, but God's place in that is the probably the ultimate, the underlying piece of information that is relevant here. There needs to be an ample appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu realizing that as a subjugated people, the only way that we had any shot of surviving was through God's mercy. And that is a big part of this whole story also. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, right? And again, if you need more reminders of how this Haggadah is really about Jewish history, not just about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, just read this. V'hisha amdel avateinu v'lanu, God who stood with us always, shelo echad bilvada madaleinu l'chaloteinu, right? It's not one nation, it's not just Mitzrayim that's risen against us. Elo shebechol dor vador, in every generation, omdim aleinu l'chaloteinu, there are people who are against us. All right, now I don't think that the message here needs to be that the Jewish people are always a victim and there's always people out to get us. All right, I mean it probably is the case, and if you look through Jewish history, but I don't think that needs to be the message. I think that the point is that I would frame it in terms of the potential for enemies. They're always going to have the potential for enemies. The only way that we can ensure eternal success is through HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because there's always going to be the potential, at least, for enemies. Right? Unfortunately, there are enemies that you can point to. I don't think that this needs to be, I don't think the Seder needs to devolve into a discussion about Iran and nuclear armaments. I wouldn't recommend that. If that's what gets your family interested, then it's not irrelevant. But I think that I would frame this discussion in terms of the potential enemies and how the only way that we can ensure eternal success is with God's help. Okay, then we get into the actual discussion. Now, I pointed this out last week. The reason why, you know, we read the psukim in Kitavo about Mikra Bikurim, about how the process of somebody bringing Bikurim, which we would think is a really strange way to frame the discussion of Yitziat Mitzrayim. And I suggested last week that the reason why is because the story of Mikra Bikurim is not about Yitziat Mitzrayim. It's about how Yitziat Mitzrayim is a central focal point in all of Jewish history. And it is what has led me to where I am today. And that's why the story is told through that. I think, by the way, if you're looking for a, you know, if you have a little bit of an older crowd, right, or a or older kids, or just adults, that's a really good, subject for discussion. Open up the Psukim in Kitavo, because we only have three of them. Maybe there's about six in Kitavo. Open up the Psukim in Kitavo and say, read them. This is what, and this is what it discusses. And you know, Arami Ovid Aviv Ayir Mitzrayim, we went down to Mitzrayim, and it's led me up to this point of bringing Mikurim. Why am I, and ask that question. What do you think? Why am I using these psukim as opposed to everything in Sefer Shemot to discuss Yitziat Mitzrayim? I think that's a really good topic for discussion. So you definitely you could throw that out there. Or, I mean, you need to read the psukim inside. You can ask it baderech, but I think that since this is the main focal point of the Seder, this section, I think that this is where, if you're going to spend the hour discussing something, it shouldn't be at Manishtana, it shouldn't be at Halach Manya, it should be here, in these psukim. So, that's what I'll say about that. If you're going to spend a lot of time on something, it should be at this point. Because this, the next page, right, page 3 to right, the end of, the mid, to the middle of page 5, that is the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Through these psukim. And it's through drashot, and then we need to figure out how to read that. So let's go through this quickly. Say ulmad ma bikesh lavan arami lasot liyakov avinu shepar lo gazar ala lazacharim lavan bikesh lakarta kol shenema. Notice how we kind of like sidle into the story. We don't say, okay, now we're going to discuss the Yitziat Mitzrayim. We just say we do it by derech, you know, in, by way of saying you lavan arami was terrible. Why was lavan arami terrible? Because Paro wanted to do one thing, but Lavan Arami was so much worse. As we see, Arami Ovid Avi Vayir Mitzrayim Vayagar Shamim Temaat Vayisham Goy Gadol Tzumbarav. So in this one pasuk, we have the lead up to the Exodus, and we have the flourishing in Mitzrayim, and then which we know eventually leads, as the next pasuk, as Vayareyu tells us, is what leads to the slavery. So this is what I mentioned this last week, and this is what I think is really important. The use of Tanakh in the Seder, in this section, is extremely significant. Everybody can open up an English Hebrew Tanakh, and everybody can. I didn't put the references here. I wanted to, but it was going to be too difficult. Everybody should get their hands on a Haggadah that actually uses the citations. You open up these to this section. You see where these psukim are, and yeah, I think it would be kedai if we're going to spend a couple of hours of preparation time before Pesach everybody already is. The fact that we're all here, and we were here last week, we've already spent a couple of hours. If you're willing to spend a couple of hours more, open up a Tanakh and take a couple of notes on what these psukim are and where they're coming from. Look at those psukim in context and see if there's anything that speaks to you in terms of what it's saying. What do I mean? They went down, right? I'm in the middle at the top of page 3. They went down, or this is the drashot, the Chazal's interpretations of these of the psukim in Kitavo. Vayagar sham, they lived there. Lamed shelo yarad Yaakov avinu lishtakeh b'Mitzrayim ela lagur sham. This teaches us that Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim, not to mess around, but he went to actually live there. Shne'emar vayomru al paro lagurba eretz banu ki ein mirel atzon asher lavadecha ki chaved arav aretz knan v'ata yeshuna lavadecha b'eretz goshen. Right? Anybody, any kid who's learned Sefer Breishit has learned that pasuk. This is a pivotal moment in which Yaakov Avinu was escaping the famine of Eretz Canaan and decided to go down to Mitzrayim with his entire family to be saved, right? To be protected by Yosef, who was now the second in command in all of Mitzrayim. And at this moment, Yaakov declared, "I'm going down not just to mess around. I'm going down. We're going there to actually set up shop to live." All right? And not only that, I'm going to send my son ahead of me. He's going to find some good housing. He's going to make some bids for us with a realtor. All right, we're going to find some good land to graze. We're all shepherds. We're going to find some good land to graze our animals. Some good farmland. We're going to make sure that there's a kosher pizza store and all of the accoutrements that are necessary for a nice Jewish life. And that's what's the and that's what's going on. Those are the types of things that you do, not when you're going on vacation or where you're going on a business trip. Those are the types of things that you go, what you're doing when you're going permanently. What was Yaakov thinking? Why was Yaakov thinking that? What was Yaakov doing? You, David, you, Shira, my beloved children who are sitting right here in front of me at the Seder. You guys, you know these psukim, you know this parsha. What's Yaakov doing? What's this story about? What's going on in this story? Why is Yaakov going down? What do you know about the story? Let them tell it to you. All right? And I think if you have the ability to do it, if your kid is actually learning these psukim, open up their chumash and say, look, this, what's in the Haggadah is actually coming from the pasuk that you read. Take a look. What does this mean? And have the kid answer it, because that's something, this is a perfect opportunity for the people at the table to be engaged in the discussion and information that they actually know. When we get to the psukim in Yechezkel, it's harder. But these are psukim that people are familiar with, the story that people are familiar with. Right? 70 people. What does everybody knows the Rashi about 70. There were 69 if you count. Make this a discussion. All right, go back. Then we go to the next pasuk. This is the entire story of the slavery in Egypt is encapsulated in this pasuk. If you want to talk about Jewish people being subjugated, if you want to talk about difficulty that a member of your family experienced in Auschwitz or in a concentration camp, this is the point to do it. They tricked us. As the Sukkim and Shemot say, if this is the point, how are they trying to outsmart us? Talk about Germany in the 1930s. Talk about the Nuremberg Laws. Talk about how before the Jewish people could ever be sent to concentration camps, you had to get an entire nation to believe that they were subhuman. How do you do that? You start from the bottom up. That's what Paro was doing. He needed to make the people right. Make this relevant to now. If you're a big social justice people, talk about the subjugation of the minority in impoverished communities in the poverty stricken communities in the U.S. Talk about how they're born into poverty. They're born into a culture that unfortunately has a 70% single motherhood rate. Right? How do you expect somebody to be successful when you're dealing with that? I mean, depending on the age of your kid, that's a message that I think could be really resonant. You're talking about people for whom the system is rigged against them. If the system is rigged against you, how can you ever expect to be anything but what society is predetermined for you to be? Those are discussions that you can have on this puzzle. All right, and that's what if you're planning the discussions, and I can't emphasize enough how important it is to plan what you want to say and when you want to say it. If you're planning your discussions at the Seder, this is the point. On the psukim of Vayareo Tano Amitzrim Vayanunu Vayatnu Alino Vadakasha, this is the time to talk about subjugation. The time to talk about discrimination. The time to talk about the bottom-up process of a people or a society or a culture becoming discriminated against. Vanitzak El Hashem. This is the point of davening. This is the point where we start discussing how we climb out of it. Through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vanitzak El Hashem Elokei Avotinu Vayishma Hashem Et Koleinu Vayaret Oninu Ve'et Amaleinu Ve'et Lachatzeinu. Davening to Hashem and having that be the ability to climb out of things. Alright? Again, whatever story that you have on a personal level, on a collective level, whatever Rebbe story that you've read that you think is significant, whatever, if you read Yaffa Eliach's book about Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, things about that speak to you. People davening, sitting in a concentration camp and davening. I mean, people will disagree with me on this. Maybe I shouldn't say this into a recording. But the black communities during the civil rights era, going to church and actually crying out to God that things be better for them, that things be improved for them, because the entire country and society was stacked against them. Religious faith in the face of oppression is something that's a really significant message here. All right. Again, whatever speaks to the people that you're talking to, I think that this is the point where you talk about how faith in the context of oppression, as being a vehicle for climbing out of it, is extremely significant. And that's, again, if you, the reason I formatted it this way is to show you, look, they're indented. So you have this pasuk which talks about success, right? That's our army Ovid Avi. We originally were subjugated, but we climbed out of it and we became very successful. But vayareyu atanu amitzur vayanunu, this is the point of subjugation and of discrimination. And then we get to hear vanitzak el Hashem, religious faith. And God was benevolent, and He recognized and He saw our oppression, and He climbed out of it. Vayotzienu Hashem from Mitzrayim yad chazaka v'zeran netuya. What happened as a result of our crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as a result of our persistent faith, we were actually able to climb out of that subjugation. We were successful. If anybody has ever gotten goosebumps from the story of the vote for partition, or the vote for or the Israeli Declaration of Independence in May of 1948, this is the time to tell that story. The religious feelings that the religious community felt at that moment. This was a society that was 90% secular, and you had religious people convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that this was the hand of God. I mean, there's large segments of the religious community that didn't feel that way, but you know, our community by and large did feel that way. This is the time to tell that story. This is the time to make everybody recognize that, you know, you don't even need to talk about your own personal experience. Talk about somebody else's experience. My grandfather, I mentioned this during the Zionism Shiurim, I think. My grandfather grew up on the Lower East Side. He was Shomer Shabbos every day of his life. He would never, ever, ever walk out of the house with a yarmulke on. Well, Baba Cheshbon, he would never even consider it. And for the first time in his life, in 1948, he was welling with pride about being a firm Jew, about being an observant Jew, and he never put a hat on again for the rest of his adult life. Think about that. Think about how that, tell that story, make it personal. How somebody could completely shift their way of functioning because they recognized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was here in a very real sense and affecting our lives. Whatever speaks to you, whatever meaningful, we'll call it deliverance, call it, if graduating, finishing graduate school or getting a job was, you felt had some religious significance. Pick a milestone in your life that was significant and you actually experienced religious feelings. And tell that story and make it real. That's the, right, you shouldn't say, all right, that's the same thing. Me getting a job is the same thing as the Jewish people leaving Egypt. But this, again, if this is a model for all of Jewish people, for all of Jewish history, let this point be the point where you talk about deliverance, where you talk about achievement, where you talk about religious feelings of reaching a milestone. Appreciation. Shalach v'hoda'ah. Okay. That, in a nutshell, is the section that deals with the story of, right? And then it's only three psukim. The next section, which it's section three in the Roman numerals here, which are starting at the bottom of four, is when we get into the extent of the divine intervention. Right? It's not enough that we just tell the story. We want to talk about the details and the intricacies of how God actually did what He did. And that's where the talking about the Makot actually comes in. Notice, we don't tell every detail of the Exodus. We don't talk about, we can inject it, but the Haggadah doesn't directly address how many, the details in the beginning of Shmos, about how many bricks that needed to be made, and how the quota changed, and Moshe coming along, and changing things. Moshe's not even mentioned, right? So there's so many details of the Exodus that are left out. The extent of God's intervention is one of the things that actually is given a lot of detail. I think that the main focus here is, again, appreciating the extent of God's intervention. So this is the time to talk about, I think, the extent of the salvation, the extent of the success, and ideally where you see God in it. Okay. So you're going to talk about all of the, Dam Tzvardei HaKinim, you're going to go through the Makot, right? And again, if you're dealing with little kids and you're working on imagery, right? This is in my family. This was in our family this year. This is a big part of our Seder. I think I mentioned this last week. I've been doing a project with my kid of color. I got a Makos coloring book. I got it online. If anybody's interested, I can send you the link. You can just print them out. So I colored a different page for every one of the Makot, and we're hanging them up in the dining room. And I'm hoping, God should help me, that my 3-year-old is actually going to still be awake at this point in the Seder. My plan is for him to give everybody a tutorial on all of the Makot when we get to this point. Again, to try and foster anticipation and excitement. We get to this point. Now, do I think that this is the best point to really get into detail about the story? No, but I do think that in terms of my kid's age and the fact that he's obviously likes the color and he's into visual aids because he's a 3-year-old, this is an opportunity that we have to expand things for him. So this is what I'm choosing to do it. The other part that isn't really in the story much at all is Kriyat Yamsuf, but that's another part of the story when we were doing Parsha during Sefer Shemot. He got really excited about it, so I'm playing that up also. And the other wall is going to be a giant mural of two walls of water with people walking through, and we have streamers coming across the dining room. It's going to look like a like I said last week. It's going to look like a carnival.
What are you going to tell him to ask you on Moshe's birthday?
That's a great question. What would you tell him, Ben?
I asked you.
All right. Anybody want to answer? Why isn't Moshe in the Haggadah? It's a great question. Yeah. Because we want to focus on Hashem, and this is probably the best section to make that point. Why is Moshe? And you could, and if your kid's not asking the question, you should ask it for them. Why do you think Moshe's not in the story? If you learn Parsha, you know that every single one of these makot Moshe put his stick down. Because the important thing to recognize here is that we were not being saved by Moshe; we were being saved by Hashem. And the same way, Moshe, as much as he is the most important person Jew to ever live. The Torah puts a lot of emphasis on the fact that he died and is no longer here. In terms of the historical relevance, and maybe this is a pshat that we can actually give for why Moshe is not in the Haggadah. If the Haggadah is really about the historical Jewish history and Yetzias Mitzrayim's role, Moshe's role was not in his Jewish history. His role was just in Yetzias Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, though, God's role is about all of Jewish history, which is why we're emphasizing this is all. We're framing it all as being God's handiwork. Okay? So I think that in this section that's what needs to be. I mean, I think that's really what the next section is also about, placing the story in perspective. That's what the Dayenu is. The purpose of Dayenu is to show how great this was. Putting it in perspective. How valuable every aspect of this is. It's a great song. It's an opportunity to just sing and get people interested from that. If your family is musical, this was right. I come from a really musical family, so this was always a big part for us because we did a lot of harmonies and we did a lot of rhythm, and this is what spoke to us. I think the song is always a really good opportunity. Sing as much as you can during the Seder. But this is not. But again, I think the focus is the perspective. Okay, the rest of Magid is really about bringing it home. All right. The D, we're on page 6, D, which is Rabbi Gamliel, I think is about connecting everything that we were just talking about to what's on the table. Pesach, Matzah, Omar, it's all about the mitzvot hayom. It's about recognizing that everything that we are doing at this table right now is because of everything that we've just discussed. All right, and then I think that when we get into the rest of this is about shifting between the relevance to today and then Ahal of Hodah. So you see, the blue paragraph here, it really highlights the fact that it's the relevance of all of Jewish history. And I'll just, I want to get into this last just list of suggestions. So let me just skip over. I mean, this is all pretty much much of the same thing. But let me just bring it home by discussing, and we're in H on the back of page 7. All right? The final closing point of Magid, on which we then make a bracha and have another kos, is the bracha of Asher Galanu V'Galat Avoteinu Mitzrayim. Okay, if you want a proof that we are not discussing Yitzhak Mitzrayim here, but we're discussing all of Jewish history and how Yitzhak Mitzrayim is this watershed moment that affected all of Jewish history. You don't need to look further than this bracha. We're not saying, think of Al-Anisim. Think of the Al-Anisim that we say on Chanukah and Purim. Those are perfect examples of piyutim that we say, of brachot that we're saying that are direct thanksgiving to God for specific events in history. That's not what we're saying here. Asher Ga'alanu V'Ga'alat Avoteinu Mitzrayim, for blessing Hashem for being the one that created the Exodus and took us out of Egypt. V'higiyanu L'Laila Hazel Le'echol B'Matzo Ma'or. The reason why He took us out of Egypt is not to make a grand moment in history that's now to be forgotten as in the past. It's because that moment in history brought us to today. Every aspect of Yitzhak Mitzrayim impacts our lives today. And it is our challenge to do as much as we can to point that out, make that relevant. to make that relevant.
But you know, it's wrong that they left Moshe out, because if they mention Abraham and Tzchak and all the others, it's not right that you didn't.
So I think Moshe is going to forgive God on this one, or is going to forgive Chazal. So, Ben, it's a good point, but what I'm trying to emphasize here...
Yeah, but Hashem should be so defensive about the omnipresence that he loses respect because of some guy did that.
So, look, I think it's a good point. I mean, well, he is mentioned once. By Amin of Hashem of Moshe Abdo. All right, by the Shirat Hayam. I'll say it this way. There are times where we have values, all right? And there are times where keeping to those values could be at the expense of larger values, right? The value that you're advocating right now is Kavod HaTorah, or, you know, Kavod Tamidei Chachamim, which of course is not something that I'm going to argue with. But the greater value here is seeing the importance and significance of Yetziat Mitzrayim as a function of Jewish history, and how it affects all of Jewish history. This is a suggestion I'm making here right now. If we focused on Moshe, we run the risk of focusing just on the historical moment of Yetziat Mitzrayim and less on God's providence through all of Jewish history. And so what we're doing is we're sacrificing the potential opportunity for Kavod HaTorah, Kavod Moshe Rabbeinu in one moment for the greater goal. I think that is probably, if we're going to say that this is why Moshe is absent, that's probably how we would say it. Okay, let me just quickly, I made a short list of things, and again, I encourage everybody to get in touch with me if you have any questions, any discussions, any suggestions that you have. If we come up with a good list, I think that it would be a really good thing to actually send out to everybody this week. Maybe I'll do it anyway. So this is just a couple of things. I mentioned a lot of these in our discussion this morning, but depending on who you're talking about. So for toddlers, a lot of visual tools and props. So picture I got those extra props, acting out parts of the story. What I'm planning, all right, this is the age that I'm working with this year. So what I'm planning on doing is that for every section that we get to, I want to have somebody at the Seder being in charge of getting up and acting it out. So if we're at we're going to talk about somebody going down to Mitzrayim acting really hungry. I got a hat that I put an stuffed Kiddush cup on top of. The person who's doing the acting is going to do that. And I got a Gandalf stick from Amazon.com, like a Gandalf staff, which is at our Seder is going to be Moshe's staff. The person who's doing the acting is going to hold the Moshe staff and wear the funny hat, and they're going to be in charge of the acting. I have a 3-year-old. This is the type of thing that's going to speak to him. All right, you get to dress up and act funny. I got a big paro hat. I'm going to be wearing a paro costume at the Seder. Some people wear a kittel. I'm going to be wearing a paro costume. So acting out parts of the story, costumes, dress up. I think that the Rambam actually says this explicitly. Awarding kids candy at intervals in the Seder is a really good thing. Ask questions. Every time they answer a question, they get a taffy. Every time we get to another section, right? And point that out. Every time we get, like, if they have a Haggadah, you can even mark it off at the beginning. Every time we get to this star, if you're still up, you get another candy. Right, I mean, I have a 3-year-old. His entire existence is for candy right now. Like this is pretty much anybody who gives out lollipops to him in shul knows this, or who has seen him in shul. I think it's a really, really good and valuable tool. The final culmination of our Seder is did I mention this last week? We made it in our. I started this last year. I called it an Afi Explosion. I took every candy in the. I bought one of every candy in the store, in the kosher store, in Seasons, and I put it in a bag and I hung it like a piñata. And if you get to the end of the Seder, right, you get to pull the string and be showered with candy. Right? And we called it the Afi Explosion. Right? That my son has been talking about the Afi Explosion since last Pesach, about how that's what we're going to do. Again, it's a really, the Rambam says it, that you use treats and sweets to get kids excited. It's a really, really valuable tool. When you're talking about pre-adolescence, so I mentioned this before, use the parshiot, use the information that they're knowledgeable at and learned in school. Look at material that they've brought home. Visual aids and props for this age, I think, is also still really, really, really valuable. Trivia games, I mean, again, this is going to depend on your kid, but trivia games is really, really good. I came up last year with a list of like 50 questions to organize based on the section of the Seder and the information that was relevant.
Send those?
I could send them. All right, so no, depending on, I was dealing with a lot of different ages last year, so they were of different levels, but, you know, so you can organize them by level, and you could say, okay, who wants a question? If you get a question at every section, this part is about the Jewish people getting suffering, so ask a question about that. Anybody who gets it right gets a candy. Moving on. I think that stuff is really good. Making a game show out of your Seder is something that is really good. Okay, so adolescence, in a lot of ways, can be the most rewarding and most most substantive, but it also can be the most challenging, depending on your kid. This is the time and this age to pick an aspect of the story that they find compelling. All right. So if you're I've had a lot of discussions with Sasha about this over the last few months. I know that the area of morality and justice in society is something that really, all right, and it's something to be proud of. So that's something that really, really, it gets at her gut. So, if you want to talk about income inequality, I think that that's a really good opportunity at the Seder to discuss something. And if you have a kid who's really taken by Bernie Sanders and his message about income inequality, right? It's something to talk about at the Seder. I don't think that it should devolve into a political discussion. I don't think it should be about who you should vote for. But I do think that if those are the things that interest your kid or the members of your Seder, and I think that this last section is really relevant to all members of your Seder, then that's what you should be talking about. That's what you should be getting, what you should be focusing your discussion about. The topic of free will. Paro's having his heart being hardened. Read an article about what the Mepharshim have to say about that. That's a really good contemporary discussion. How does somebody have free will? Connect to other parts of history. I've been mentioning that a lot. Use information that they're familiar with. This age, once you get to adults, that's when you have the potential and I think the obligation to get as far as you as necessary away from the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim in order to make it an interesting and relevant and compelling discussion. Okay? Perhaps the biggest challenge, perhaps the biggest challenge is when you have a variety of ages and interest and levels of interest and observance and knowledge at the table. And when that is the case, I think what you got to do is do as much switching off as you can, but you got to make sure that you don't lose anybody. So what I'd like to do, all right, and I'm hoping to do a little bit of this year, is to set it up so that you have the other members of the Seder playing an active role working with the younger kids. So we're gonna have a few guests at my Seder. We're gonna have some trivia. I wanna split around the trivia, not just have me or Dina ask the questions, but I wanna give a list of questions to a couple of the members of the Seder. And we say, when we get to this point, I want you to ask that. I want you to discuss with my kid this particular topic. And I want you to tell them what you think about it. Right? Do whatever you can to include and incorporate every single person at every single aspect to the extent of your ability. What we did this morning and last week, a superficial discussion of these topics is an understatement. Every single line, every single comma, every single word, every single turn of phrase in the Haggadah you can spend hours discussing. But just to recap what my opinion is about all of this. I think that the most important thing in terms of the Haggadah is to understand what the core message of it is. And for me, in my understanding, it's Jewish history and the relevance of Yetziat Mitzrayim and the story of the Exodus to the long story of Jewish history and how it is eternally relevant. Using that, I think that the best thing to do is to gear your discussion, to gear the Talmud Torah and the Sefer Yetziat Mitzrayim that goes on around the table around that theme, to the extent that you can. That's what makes it most authentic, and I ultimately think that's what's going to make it most substantive. So with that, I wish everybody a Chag Kasher v'Sameach. Thank you so much for coming. Like I said, if anybody has any questions or any thoughts or suggestions, by all means, I really very much encourage it. Thank you so much. Yishkoach. Thank you.